going to let it get out and around.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it.
And secondly, when it is brought into court, we want to ensure that it hasn't been tampered with. But if they can make a copy before they ever bring it to the judge, there goes your privacy. Of course, maybe it's the federal say we want to do it.
But they do say that you can use it in your investigation and the information
obtained. How can you? If the damn thing is sealed.
Well, that's why the provisions are there for making a copy.
Or you have the information from the beginning, but you don't have the actual recording. So
chances are, when they were discussing this in Congress, that they decided to seal it to protect it, and then somebody brought up the question, probably, well, what are we going to do? You know, we're going to need to use it. So, well, we'll let them make a copy.
Yeah, where does it say that? 17. Now, I have another question. Do we attach a sanction to 21 if they disclose it or use it in a such manner as isn't appropriate to proper performance? What's kind of a sanction? Here we say they can't do it, but is there a penalty section on the end of this that says violation of that is of any provision of this article is a misdemeanor?
Well, at the very beginning of our original draft, we've provided in there that any eavesdropping and whatnot is done outside of the authorization of this article.
That's kind of circuitous. Would that cover the officer who would use it and disclose it in an inappropriate manner?
Well, maybe not, but there are federal laws that would get to him, too. I mean, as far as...
Well, if, of course, if you go on that theory, then what the heck are we bothering with adopting a state statute at all? If you're going to,
because
the enforcement of it is going to have to be left to the federals.
Well, because they've said that if you want to authorize wiretapping, this is the way you have to do it.
Well, it seems to me that we better build in. If we're going to put a sanction on unlawful police use or disclosure, we better put the sanction right in that particular statute. That's the state of, that's what's wrong with the present criminal code to such a large extent. We say that it shall be unlawful, and then you find out that there's no penalty section in this section or that section.
It's our present wiretapping statute. We have one.
It's short, concise.
Yeah. Why can't you just go back to it?
But it's unlawful. Hand.
This thing is a never-ending morass of... you look at subsection 4 of section 21. Good Lord, there's, we open the door wide again. Every time we turn around, we... I'm sorry. But this thing is just never-ending. It's a morass. Labyrinth.
You said that twice.
Guy said it.
Labyrinth. Labyrinth.
Well.
Labyrinth.
You get
that
in
the
war. You made a copy and amended it on the emergency basis.
Well, if you look at section 2511 of chapter 119 of title 18 of the U.S. Code, I think there's your answer to why we can't go back to what we have now, because I think what we have now violates the federal statute.
Don, when you say violates, you mean doesn't go as far as?
That it goes too far.
Too far?
Yes. It is beyond what is authorized.
Under 21-4 and the other one, 21-4?
That was one of their purposes in passing this.
And they specifically say that if a law enforcement officer goes beyond what's authorized with respect to use or disclosure, then
it's a crime, it's wrongful, right? And we have to put it in here, is that right?
Well, we have a section 6 on divulging illegally obtained information. Intentionally uses or divulges information he knows to have been initially obtained through a violation of section 2. Section 2 would be any information obtained without legal authority granted under sections 9 through 25.
John, I don't think we have to make it a separate state crime to not comply with what we say you have to do here. We don't have to do that to conform with Chapter 119. But where we do have to conform are under the procedural provisions for the basis for getting and using an eavesdropping warrant. Beyond that, we don't have to make it a separate state crime because it's going to be a federal crime if you don't comply.
Well, in view of Section 6 here on page 26 of the preliminary draft 2, why can't we just eliminate Section 21, these amendments? We could, couldn't we? I mean,
Section
6 on page 26 of preliminary draft 2. Am I relevant to your?
Well, except it does help to give the law enforcement people some guidelines. I think it's good to that extent. They can go to the statute and read what they can or cannot do in one place without.
Maybe. What do you think?
I think we need that.
What's the pleasure of the commission?
There is another subsection in this section we haven't looked at yet.
Okay. Go ahead, read it.
And this is on the order of amendment. This comes up when, during a period of authorized eavesdropping, the communication is intercepted which wasn't otherwise sought, and it constitutes evidence of a designated crime that is being about to be committed, but it is not authorized by the warrant.
It goes beyond present state law, too.
I don't think that's right. If you search, and you come across contraband, you're entitled to see.
And arrest, use it for.
Or other evidence indicating the possession of the commission of a crime.
Arrest you for the burglary, and you're an ex-con, and they find a pistol on you when they search you.
Sure.
They can charge you being an ex-con.
The
thing of it is that your right to privacy is already been broken. They have a right to search. So anything they find longer is locked in there. They can go ahead and see
what you're getting with your authorized and fishing expedition.
Probable cause.
It's all right, probable cause for the crime that you're investigating and thinks that he committed a crime. But then you throw everything else you get into it?
Well, if you're serving a search warrant,
and
it demands you to look for guns, and you come across a stack of heroin recognizable as such, you're supposed to grab it. And if the guy standing by it is in possession of it, he's guilty of a crime. You charge him with it, convict him.
Right.
And put him in the slammer.
You arrest a guy for a hunting violation and just happen to find a bunch of burglar tools in the car, it's admissible.
Right. Well, you aren't quite sure what you want. He's a bad guy.
What?
You aren't quite sure what you're looking for. He's a bad guy.
Taking the
usual case.
Yeah, you're right.
He's
a nice
Washington
County. Put the bug on him and Only. Judge Connie again.
Yeah, yeah. Connie's once again.
Larry's one thing in this commission.
I think we're about to get into trouble again. Tony's gone.
What's your wish with respect to Section 21?
Subsection 4 of Section 21 is entirely.
Good. They made the motion.
Representative Frost moves that we delete sub 4 of Section 21 in its entirety. Somebody call for the question?
Question.
Okay, all in favor of the amendments say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Carried.
Somebody want
Section 22?
Somebody want a roll call? Chair's in doubt. We'll have a roll call vote on Representative
All out! Tony!
It's a sergeant of arms here. We'll have a roll call vote.
There's a lot of noise in the other room. Shut this door.
All in favor of the motion to delete, say aye as your names are called. All opposed, say no.
Judge Byrne?
No.
Senator Byrne?
No.
Oh, no, you want
to. Remember, it's for the primary, then.
Ross.
Aye.
Hawes.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
No.
Young.
Aye.
Carson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
4-4.
I voted no.
Yeah.
It's 4-4. Okay, it's failed.
That's what happened.
Any other, what's the pleasure of the committee with respect to?
I will be adopt the section.
Well, the chairman made a policy.
Pass it, Mr. Chairman.
The chairman made a policy decision that he was going to vote on
all of the same time. Yeah, right.
Not me. Do you have any other amendments to make on Section 21? Any other discussion?
Sure, he's not here.
Our rules don't define
that. Any other discussion on 21? If not, we'll go to 22.
Section 22 in two definitions. These last sections relate to the notice. Thank God, all our eavesdropping has been done, and we're ready to try something.
Yeah,
please
do.
And I agree with the sentence on right.
Now we've got to try and get it in evidence.
You agree with the
persecution.
So this will involve notice before use and the motion to suppress.
Frankly, you know, the guy's still there, young. Done with sleep.
So Section 22 is just the definition.
Subsection 2 is an aggrieved person means a person who is a sender or receiver of a communication described in Section 9, a party to a conversation or discussion described in Section 9, or a person against whom the overhearing or recording described in Section 9 was directed.
Okay, let's go to 23, 4, and 5 before we really discuss this. Unless you have a question, Jim?
Great.
Okay, now it's 23.
It's notice before use, the contents of an intercepted communication or evidence derived therefrom shall not be received in evidence or otherwise disclosed upon trial of a defendant unless the state, not less than 10 days before the commencement of the trial, has furnished the defendant with a copy of the eavesdropping warrant and accompanying application under which the interception was authorized or approved.
Now, do you have to serve a demand upon the state, or the state unilaterally has to do this?
Mr. Chairman, I move we delete the words 10 days and insert 1 year.
Well, if there's no objection, so you want to delete that in, you want to insert that in two also?
Yeah.
All right. What's step two?
That 10-day period may be waived by the court if it finds it isn't possible to furnish the defendant 10 days before the trial. The defendant won't be prejudiced by delay in receiving the papers.
Chair will give Mr. Frost the 10 minutes to explain his amendment.
In answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, the defendant doesn't have to make a demand here. The state's required.
The burden is upon the state.
Are we discussing
Section? Yeah, I think so.
But I didn't think we discussed
Mr. Chairman, may I go back to 22 sub C?
Okay.
The aggrieved person is a person against whom the overhearing was directed. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean the person described in the application for the warrant? Yeah. Is that clear?
Well, I think what that's for is that you may have someone who you're giving standing to object to the use of this who may not have been actually participating in any of the conversations that were recorded or received as a result of the eavesdropping. But originally you directed you'd asked for authority to intercept communications involving A, B, and C. Well, maybe A and B participated in some conversations and you did make the recording. But C maybe didn't, but you're still giving him standing here because he's going to be implicated as a result of what A and B did, possibly. I mean, that's the way I read this, is that you're giving him standing to object to the use of this, even though he may not fall into either A or B and have been one of the persons actually engaging in the conversations.
Carl? Mr. Chairman, I wonder if I should kind of pose a policy question here in Section 23. It appears 10 days prior to the trial, we have to serve the defendant with a copy of the eavesdropping warrant and the application. I'm wondering what objection there is to serving also a copy of the communication was intercepted prior to the time of the UI. It certainly requires disclosure on part of defendants in certain instances, such as wildlife cases, I see no reason why they shouldn't have disclosed the content of the communication also.
Carlos, right. What good does it do to have
it wouldn't be bad if you limited it to the evidence or communication was going to be used, but if you opened it all, you might have problems.
Well, why shouldn't he have access to the same information that the prosecutor has access to?
That's a long
conviction.
Well, he's saying no, it's going to be used. Well, suppose it contains a lot of other material that's no relevant to the case, but it is relevant to the investigation that's in the process.
You see in Section 24, Sub 2, in the hearing on the motion to suppress, the court may, in its discretion, make available to the aggrieved defendant for inspection portions of the intercepted communication, or evidence derived therefrom if the court determines to be in the interest of justice. I have the impression, however, on 23, that 10 days is an inadequate time, particularly when you're talking in terms of the derivative evidence. 10 days might be enough if you were talking solely of the intercepted communication, because that would presumably be a matter of examining, presumably a relatively limited number of recordings. But
how about reasonable notice, but not less than?
What you're giving him here, though, is 10 days' notice. That we're going to clobber you with some transcribed evidence in 10 days. You don't
well,
more than that.
But the problem to the defendant, it seems to me, in evaluating the intercepted communication so as to determine whether or not there is derivative evidence other than that evidence which the state is willing to admit is derivative.
I know, but don't you need Hurl's thrust? For you to tell me within 10 days of trial that you're going to use it doesn't use something. Doesn't help me. You got to know what you're going to use.
Well, the purpose of the state giving this notice now, this 10 days, that probably should be longer, because if you wait until 10 days before trial, you're not going to be going to trial in the 10-day period, probably.
But this then gives the defendant the opportunity then to give notice that he's going to, that this type of evidence is going to be used against him. So if he wants to test the probable cause of this wiretap being authorized on him, he is served with notice that he, that this evidence is going to be used, so he files his motion to suppress it, because this is going to be his, might say, his only opportunity to test the legality of the probable cause of the issuance of the eavesdropping warrant in the first place. So, as far as the...
Given him about 24 hours from the time he's had to take the court. He's telling him he got played. He's going to use this type of evidence. Sure, I mean, I know some of us know exactly what you're talking about, and some might not. That puts him on pretty short notice to be able to prepare a defense if he has one. What he's going to learn from this time is.
I'm going to try to put him on notice if I get his defense is probably all left.
You should have taken him on phone.
Do you have any problem when you say defendant and you're dealing actually with an attorney and the attorney is not who you're trying to give them notice to?
No.
Yes, sir, the attorney is
on notice better hop out.
Well, I would agree. This is one of, you know, it doesn't help to say that we taped your telephone conversations. The question I'd ask is, what you want? You know, no, really, for, you know, for this point.
Yeah, but the application is going to put him on notice as to what kind of information was obtained or sought.
No, but not obtained.
Right, you have a difference in a search warrant. If they're going against the evidence, you get a search warrant. You have your return. You had to come back and they have notice of what you see.
Yeah,
here, I can't see any real argument. I can see argument against having disclosed the entire thing if they don't have other investigations that may be compromised if you've been doing it for 2 weeks. But I can't really see any real objection letting the defendant know the nature of the evidence that you see or that you've gotten through the conversation or the conversation.
So Section 17 allows that. 17 sub 5. Because any person named in the application of the warrant has to be served with notice within 90 days after the interception. And then Section 17 allows any person served with notice to make a motion made available to him or his counsel for inspection of portions of the intercepted communications.
Are you assuming that it's not possible to be charged and go to trial within 90 days after the
discretionary report?
It's a little different between a court considering a general motion to disclose all or a portion of it than the court considering the motion directed towards something specific in the general area that's going to be used against them in a trial, too. I think you have two different considerations.
Well, the first point is why put him through the process of having to file this motion? If this is a trial situation, why not?
Yeah, and if we're going to use it, I think.
Well, but are you
really reasonable time?
Sure, so just exactly what you're going to use in a trial?
Sure. Yeah, it's a form of disclosure.
Yeah, but I mean, are you that sure what you're going to be using in the trial, depending on what kind of it and what the defense. Then it may be more of it. But you know you're going to use some
right
evidence derived from it. But then what if through the development of the trial.
It's a good point that if you're going to put something, you have to disclose points, and then you've got to have some waiver by the judge on good cause being shown. You still have to know why you're going to use the
Well, what you think?
Well, Mr. Chairman, by any magic and figures, I would move to amend Section 23 to provide that 10 be deleted from wherever it appears in Section 30 days be inserted.
30?
Now,
we're not even advised to trial.
Yeah, we are. So that's going to mean that we're.
we're coming under Section 2 all the time.
Not less than 10 days after the indictment.
A lot of times you won't have a guy arrested in 10 days. Mark,
how about compromise and say 20?
Well, 20.
20 is reasonable.
Well, the problem I see is that in analyzing the tape to determine whether or not there is derivative evidence and whether or not the evidence that the state claims is derivative is the only derivative evidence, it's going to take a fella quite a little while. It's one thing to sit and listen to, say, an hour and a half or 2 hours of tapes and make your determination of based upon those and upon the papers whether or not it was a good search warrant and so on and so forth. But when it comes to determining did they derive other evidence and is that which they admit is derivative the only derivative evidence, this is a more time-consuming situation.
May I make a suggestion? How about making it reasonable time, but not less than 20 days? Have the judge set the trial over if he really needs the guy.
Let me suggest this. When you move against the substance
that's right.
That's been obtained, you're going to be moving against the manner in which it was obtained, against the warrant or something.
You're not testing the quality or quantity of the evidence obtained. You're testing whether or not there's basis for
the warrant. But doesn't that ignore the fact that whether or not you've tested or not depends on what the substance is?
Section 24 says, an aggrieved defendant may move to suppress the contents of any intercepted communication or evidence derived therefrom. I suggest to you that latter part of it is where the time crunch, I think, comes in.
But Judge, it says on the ground that unless A, B, C, and those are the grounds that you can attack on, those all go to the form and substance and content of the application that was made in the form of the warrant, obviously.
Yes, but there's going to be a question, the judge says, as to whether or not this really derives from the wiretap, or are you going to be able to
poison
the tree.
Aren't those two separate? It sounds pretty good.
Well, we're not worried about the fruit that just hangs and drops, but we got the whole tree poisoned.
Or the whole tree is rotten.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you're going to move against the reporting and evidence derived therefrom, and then you're going to either get a motion granting it or denying it. If you get a motion granting it, then you're going to argue during the course of the trial whether certain evidence that comes up was derived therefrom.
What followed that well?
As a practical matter, that I don't think in most cases, that unless the defense attorney and the deputy's handling the case and the judge, from the 10 days before trial until the trial, are going to be doing nothing but working on this case, in most counties, it's going to mean that it's going to have to be continued for much more than the 10 days.
How many are opposed to the 30 days?
Well, I understand that we have some jurisdictions that don't even know that the trials and set.
But of course, that would come under Section 2. I mean, okay, that.
But that isn't.
Why not? You couldn't serve within 30
days.
Why
not put
it
reasonable, but in no event less than? Then if it is a matter where he's waited the last moment, he's got to make a long investigation.
I think it's better if it's just more specific.
The problem with that, Lee, is that it furnishes a decision point for the court, and he's going to have to fight that out.
I think, Mr. Chairman, 30 days is reasonable. I understand in Baker County sometimes they set their trials as much as 300 days in advance, and I dare say that
in Malheur County they set them 2 days in advance.
Then maybe they ought to reevaluate their documents.
Judge Burns moves that wherever 10 appears, it'll be changed to 30. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
Mr. Chairman, I move that as a policy decision, the necessity of the statewide copies of the intercepted communication and advise as to the derivative evidence to the defendant prior to the time that you're utilizing the
product. We haven't been intended to use. Would that come under 24?
23, I think.
Yeah,
it would be in the same notice, they're giving notice that much in advance of that, rather than just the warrant.
What's the general feeling on that? Any further discussion? I see the district attorneys don't oppose it too strenuously.
You've got one problem in that you might have some of the seal. So if you're going to have a copy,
if you give a notice that you're going to use this, so you can test the validity of it, and that's going to be on the ground. This is all he needs here. He's got another provision over here where he can get copies of it or portions of it. He can apply for it.
In the judge's discretion.
Mm-hmm. Did you look at 24 sub 2? Last sentence of sub 2.
Yeah. It seems to me, though, we're giving the state the right to invade and intercept and utilize, and we're giving the defendant, who was the subject of this invasion, the right to request that he know what the invasion of his privacy is discovered. It seems to me if the state can intercept and utilize, he ought to have the right to knowledge prior to the trial, so he can prepare the things.
What about facilitating impeachment purposes?
For impeachment purposes?
That's a good question.
The DA should look at this as being a matter of fully disposing of the case, which probably facilitates police.
Well, the problem that I see
with COVID. That's a question we ought to
Judge Byrne.
The problem I see, Harold, with the full disclosure is that in the cases which you may very well have in your conspiracy and so on cases, you may very well have material on there that isn't going to be used in this case, but which will be valuable and is going to be used in another case.
Well, it's limited to the evidence that they're going to use.
I just think we should have, I can imagine, that's a horrible thing to be setting in court, I would imagine. I hear an alleged intercepted communication being played at 4 o'clock, final end of the state's case, and we'll start your case tomorrow morning at 9, and trying to perhaps come up with some sort of a defense would be, even if you had, you know.
Well, you're giving him the opportunity, though, under Section 24, to get that before trial.
He's giving him the opportunity to apply for it.
Well,
of course, Don, you can never raise, the defendant can never raise sub C in his ground to suppress without knowing the contents of the communication, because how are you going to make these documents conducted pursuant to the decision, or pursuant to the
Lawyer has got a blanket right to do it. You have no idea what they got. So how can you tell if it was in conformity with it, within the dates even that they specified?
You got to have contents to be aware of it.
Let's face it, they're going to demand it anyway. The only thing is some of that other section, at least some discretion with the judgment. You haven't answered the question, what are you going to do over the bottom? Suppose the state is trying to prove, suppose it's a conspiracy case. One thing the state has proved that there was a meeting someplace. And the state fully figures that they'll admit that there was a meeting, but they'll deny what the contents are. And all the tape shows that there was a meeting. The first thing that comes out of the bag is the guy denies there was a meeting at all.
Of course, you can get by that.
The state never had any intention of using the tape.
You can get by that by providing the judge can have authority to grant it under proper circumstances.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. I think you've got to have, that adds some discretion in it, because I you can't always anticipate where you're going to use them in impeachment.
We're talking about the state's case in chief is what you're concerned with. It's what do they have that's necessary to prove their case. And this is where the discretionary on letting things right. If something else comes up that hasn't been furnished, but it appears it's needed for impeachment, or for rebuttal on the alibi or something like that, then it's the discretion. Built out on a square unit.
You just lost in my draw today, Rod.
Well, it seems to me the whole issue is whether or not it is adequately covered by the judge's discretion contained in 24, or whether or not it be mandatory to disclose that with the evidence which is going to be used in the case in chief. That's about it, isn't it?
Why don't you put a vote?
All right, this the motion. Are you ready for the question? It's on a policy decision. All those in favor of the Haas motion, namely, as I understand it, that the state will be required to furnish the defendant information or copies of the evidence that they intend to use in their case in chief, rather than having a discretionary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
May I make just one comment? Yeah. Probably on the opposite side. If you limit the case in chief, you're going to have a circumstance where they're going to hold it back if they possibly can until rebuttal. So you might...
Well, the evidence that they're going to use in the case.
They may not get it in on rebuttal.
No.
Well, that's why. Where would this come in? Where are the where yeah, deserves the
yes.
And
Section 23.
Okay, now
how do you do it?
Yeah, I would say this: that there probably be no problem if you serve upon the defendant having given this notice a transcript, say, of the portions of the communication you're going to use. But there's going to be a situation where this some evidence may or may not be derived from the intercepted communication, and you may not be willing to concede at that point, at least, whether that it was actually derived from it until the motion to suppress has been decided.
Well, all right, then you have that discretionary provision.
But as I understand, Harl's motion was to include the not only of the intercepted communication, but the evidence derived therefrom also.
Yes, it would, to the extent that it's going to be the state intends to use it in this trial, which doesn't include the impeachment matters we can anticipate.
And if you allow it for a good cause shown to the judge, you can make a pretty good showing to the judge that it didn't appear to you to be derived from it. It's discretionary to the judge.
The court would have to make that determination.
But are you going to have to notify him that this... okay, let's say the murder weapon. That this... would it satisfy it to say the murder weapon may or may not have been derived from the intercepted communication?
The yes, pistol. I'd say that it would.
Because you don't know, the judge, the trial judge may suppress your eavesdrop. And so you may want to be able to turn around and argue that this
switch those horses.
We're so used to defendant doing it, we know that.
Yeah,
that
yeah, right.
Right.
Fish
right. Fish and
so that won't happen.
You may not be willing to admit right at that point when you're serving him the notice that you're going to use evidence before the motion to suppress has been decided. It's been right.
Yeah, but you got a fish or cut bait. It either has or has not.
I'm
least it'll put the defendant in a better position than he would be under these two sections as it exists.
Would you say it might have been? Is that the way you'd go in?
Well, I would just assume not have to include that, not to...
Yes, we gathered that. We got an inkling of that a little earlier.
You remember, this is, relates only to the eavesdropping cases, and you're not going to have a lot of...
We're going to lose them all. Keep the 99%.
Well, I have a question, Chair. Under Section 23, how we want to furnish this information, what form? Is the district attorney going to serve a copy of a transcript of the recording? Or a,
no, I wouldn't.
What are you going to serve on it? A statement,
a resume,
a recapitulation of what evidence you have.
Well, I would think, Mr. Chairman, wouldn't you have it verbatim?
Well, because the district, those portions?
Yeah, because the district attorney might make up a resume which leaves something out which might be very, very relevant.
Like the confession,
editorial.
Well, well, accidentally
do. Yeah, now that doesn't happen.
He may, he wouldn't be able to introduce it.
Well, aside from the business of,
do you want the staff to draft some language then to put in 23?
Yes.
With respect to the, could this information?
That could I suggest, Mr. Chairman, that Roger draft it so that it be as objective as possible?
Section 24.
This Section 24 gives grounds for a motion to suppress. An aggrieved defendant may move to suppress the contents of any intercepted communication or evidence derived therefrom, which the state intends to offer in evidence upon such defendant's trial on the following grounds. The intercepted communication was unlawfully heard, overheard, or recorded, or that the warrant under which it was intercepted was insufficient on its face, or the eavesdropping was not conducted in conformity with the warrant. And that motion shall be made in court having trial jurisdiction of the indictment or information pending. The court shall hear evidence on any issue of fact necessary to determination of the motion, and may in its discretion make available to the aggrieved defendant or his counsel for inspection portions of the intercepted communication as the court determines to be interest of justice.
That would be
justice.
No.
No, wouldn't it? I thought we were going to require...
We are, but this makes available portions of the inspected communication or evidence derived therefrom, and aren't we contemplating a statement in 23?
I think we're almost contemplating a transcript of that which we're going to say in the
jury. In 23?
It seems as if you're going to give him a transcript in Section 23, it probably wouldn't be necessary in 24.
No.
Well, you might, because you may give him a limited transcript, and there might be some portion you're not going to introduce that might go to subsection 1C that the judge in his discretion might give.
Yeah, I think he should have a right to ask for
good point.
Further.
Is that taste pretty good?
Well, spread it all over me.
Subsection 3.
3, and if the motion isn't made in accordance with this section, the defendant shall be considered to have waived any objection during trial to the admission of evidence based upon the ground that the evidence is subject to suppression as prescribed in subsection 1.
Defense counsels take note. Make the motion.
There's one thing that the question on this as far as from the defense standpoint. That it, we say that the eavesdropping warrant then was accepted as insufficient on its face. And what about the application and what it's got to?
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't that be covered by A?
That it was unlawfully overheard or recorded.
But I assume that's what it means. I don't know. I don't think it would hurt to say eavesdropping application or warrant, but I just assumed that A covered the situation.
If the warrant is improperly given, then it would be unlawfully overheard or recorded. And if the application is
I mean, the same as a search warrant, your affidavit and the search warrant against Frank.
He'll be on the other side. Why not spell it out, though?
Was there any reason, Roger, why you didn't say application
only that we just followed, we followed the federal requirements on page, the bottom of page 283 and the top of 284.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Carry.
Now,
a little jam now, isn't it?
I tried to be fair.
I noted that.
Section 25. This is the last section.
Well, this goes into the time when the motion to suppress should be made and how determined. The suppression motion shall be made before commencement of the trial, except that the court may entertain a motion made for the first time during trial upon assuring that the aggrieved defendant did not have an opportunity to make the motion before trial, or that he was not aware of the grounds of the motion.
Well, that's contrary to section 324.
No. It because 3 says that the motion is not made in accordance with the provisions of this article, which covers section 25 as well. Standard stuff. If you make your motion to suppress unless there was adequate grounds for not making it. I have one question, Roger, on section 25. Sub 3 says that if the motion to suppress is granted, the derivative evidence of the intercepted communication shall not be received in evidence in any trial, hearing, or proceeding. It seems to me this ought to be applicable only to the moving party, not to some bystander or some guy that, say, doesn't have standing to object or something like that. In other words, this is for the benefit of the guy who files the motion to suppress.
Is there
an
instance where it would be illegally intercepting communication
on the
part of the defendant and
it
would be
illegal?
Yes, to somebody else?
Yeah.
Sure.
The next judge
is
going to
have
a legal kind of
go.
Oh,
well, no.
But your application.
No, right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Suppose they start to use it against the homeowner.
Yeah.
And let us say there was some defect in the proceedings as to him. They couldn't use it as the homeowner, but let us say that as to his frequent visitor, who was the bookie, it was good as to him. Now, merely because you suppress it as the homeowner doesn't mean you should suppress it as the bookie, assuming it's good as to the bookie. Suppose, for example, one guy consents and the other guy doesn't consent in a search situation. If the guy who doesn't consent successfully suppresses it, you still got a right to use it against
Well, let's say you continue it longer than you should, and you find out evidence as to a second person, and the first person is properly done as to him. But as the second person, the pistol is hanging no longer was proper as to him.
Well, the problem there is if the motion to suppress is granted, it would be granted under one of the three grounds in section 24, and the federal bill therefore states that if that motion to suppress is granted, the communication or any evidence derived therefrom shall be treated as having been obtained in violation of this chapter. So that from taking that view, it could not be used in any trial because it would have been obtained in violation.
I don't agree with that. If the motion is granted, it is treated as been having obtained in violation of this chapter as regards that defendant.
It would have to be granted on one of these three grounds: that it was unlawfully overheard and recorded, or that the warrant's insufficient on its face, or it wasn't conducted in conformity with the warrant. So if it falls on one of those three grounds, it will be in violation of this chapter.
I think you've got a point there.
Mm-hmm. As against any person.
Judge, sorry.
Yeah, I didn't write it.
It's kind of the same language though, that we have in the search warrant statutes now, which the evidence motion to suppress, that it can't be used in any trial such a proceeding. And that section has really never been tested. I had a case once where see the judge was going to, he was starting to make it ruling the way he's talking, but he granted a motion to suppress. And another case going in Lane County using the same evidence. So as soon as I could predict which way the judge was going to rule on the motion to suppress, I stood up and moved to dismiss the case. And the defendant didn't object, so that the case was dismissed without a ruling on the motion to suppress. So if they go ahead and use it in Lane County.
Well, Roger, do you think we're bound by that? By the federal statute as a rule of evidence?
No wonder we have trouble.
We'll go out there again.
Maybe we are.
We got to work within the framework of the federal statute. There's not much point debating it.
It depends on how it's interpreted.
Let's let the Supreme Court pass on. Of course, if we leave it this way, the Supreme Court won't have anything to pass on.
That's right.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend sub 3 so as to provide that it reads, in any trial, hearing, or proceeding in which the...
You don't even need three, do you? If this just goes to that defendant, right. The court's going to move to suppress it, period. His ruling in that case will take care of the problem for that defendant. So you don't need the section at all.
But a subsequent defendant, if he's going to make a motion to suppress, he's going to make it on the same grounds as was made in the first case.
Right.
And you're going to end up with conflicting determinations then.
Maybe sure. You all the time. That's a different
determination.
I would move to amend verse 3 so as to provide that it reads, in any trial, hearing, or proceeding involving the movement.
The what? The
movement? Movement. M-O-V-A-N-T.
It's a French word, mean move on.
What I'm trying to do is get this out of the move on.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Carry. Now,
I like to move on.
Let's go back to section 15. With the exception of those sections which we deleted, that were 16. What were the others?
Just 18, wasn't it?
14. Including 14 is amended subsequent to that vote we took before lunch because we amended it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. 14 through 25, accepting 14, 16, 18, and 20. Is there a motion to adopt them as amended?
subject to our approving the language that is placed in by the staff.
I have, Mr. Chairman, I have one more section to bring up.
Well, let's take this vote anyway, quickly. Call the roll. I may change their mind. You want us to separate the... Try it this way.
Your future on the Judiciary Committee is a state representative.
Sandra
Burns.
Aye.
Carson.
No. Ross.
No.
Hodge.
Mr. Chairman, I have a proxy from Bob Chandler.
Section 14 is amended. This is a tie. It was a tie vote. Section 14 is amended. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Section 15, no amendments, I don't believe. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
16 was deleted. 17.
15 was amended. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amended.
As amended, yeah. 17, did we have any trouble on that?
It was one amendment.
We took out amendment or expiration extension on it.
Yeah, all right, as amended, all in favor?
Aye.
Carried. 18 is out. 19, as amended by Judge or successor, I believe it was. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
20 is out.
20 is out. 21. Now that's one that we had a little problem with. Call the roll.
We continue the vote on this until the next meeting.
Call the roll on 21.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Carson?
No.
Frost?
No.
Haas?
No.
Johnson? Knight?
Aye.
Young?
Nope.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. 4-4. We'll continue that one until the next.
Put that in the sex education.
Section 22.
It failed.
It was 4-4. Tie voting failed.
Yeah, right.
But we'll take it up again.
We're the same way as it on our motion.
Section 22. Is there any battle on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Section 23. Call the roll as amended, including the Haas amendment.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Carson?
Aye.
Frost?
Aye.
Haas?
Aye.
Knight?
No.
Young?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Section 24, did we have any problem on that?
No, I'm sure it was amended.
Oh, alright. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Section 25, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Unanimous. Aye. What was the problem we had with Section 21?
It says Section 4 on the back, that the evidence that they're wiretapping to get evidence on gambling, and they hear that somebody's going to assassinate the president, these guys don't want them to be able to use it.
Yours is a nonpartisan office?
I don't think that's a fair analysis.
If we could, if we could resolve this one section, Mr. Chairman, we would wrap up and get started.
Yeah.
We had more in line about the assassination of the district attorney.
If we could. If we could resolve it. Well, we can resolve anything.
If we could resolve it, we can finish the work on this article, the whole article. Otherwise, we're going to be hanging in there for another
week. Otherwise, Tommy will have to make a trip down to Baker in the middle of the week.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
Sorry about that, Tom. Thanks, Tom. Don't cave in, Tom. Don't cave in.
I'm beginning to have serious doubts about some of these reports.
privileges in the House, and those that want to go on to the Senate. I think the day shouldn't be discretion, maybe. And
or general improvement of legislative process is what you're trying to say, isn't it?
Don, I don't think we're going to resolve it. And furthermore, I don't think we better go a damn bit farther with this outfit. Anything else.
As if we could.
Meeting's adjourned.
They're a bunch of effete snobs.
We're all moving.
No, supercilious.
Move on.
Move on. I'm sorry.
We're going to have to...
How about a date for the next meeting?
Next maybe 2 days.
We're behind. We're a month behind.
Well, we're running about 60 days behind our projected timetable and things, but all things considered, it isn't too bad, I suppose. But we do have quite a bit of unfinished work.
What Don means is there any objection to a 2-day meeting? March.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
16th, 17th.
Yes. Actually, the
I had
18th and 19th in mind.
Now, I wondered about, now, with Judge Burns' subcommittee, we haven't had any policy decision with respect to the firearms registration. I was wondering if somehow, between now and the next commission meeting, we could get some work done in subcommittee.
Well,
but I don't really see how we can do it.
I don't either.
And I did want to...